This is Ann Dalton with Sun Sounds Arizona's Are We There Yet? Today I'll share an interview with Donald Porterfield. I talked with him about transportation issues and tools for local and international travel for the visually impaired. Donald shared with me that he lost his sight in his second year of law school. After adjusting to this change, he became not only the statewide affiliate for the National Federation of the Blind in Arizona, he is also the chair of the Resolutions Committee and a board member at the national level of the organization. So, he has a great deal of knowledge about all the resources available to help people with vision impairment like himself. I focus this recording on travel outside of town since so many of the trips we talk about here require some sort of travel beyond Uber or SunTran. So thank you, Donald, for making yourself available today.
You were saying something about in your position, you make sure things are moving forward. Say a little bit about that, if you will.
So by moving forward, I mean that, you know, that we're, you know, working consistently and on a daily basis to strive for equality and equity for blind people in, you know, in society, you know, making sure things such as, you know, working with public transportation to make sure that there is some sort of transportation that's available to blind people that's equal to the same kinds of transportation that a sighted person has in terms of public transportation.
Speaking of transportation, do you travel yourself?
Just here locally, I travel every day for work, you know, Monday through Friday. And, you know, we travel, you know, several times a year for the National Federation of the Blind. And we take vacations and we like to travel. And
may I ask you, what kind of visual impairment do you have, Donald?
In terms of visual, you know, acuity, I just say I'm blind, because, you know, it's easier for me to use that word because I can't do things that a sighted person does without some sort of assistive technology. My wife doesn't drive. My wife was born blind. She's never had any vision. She doesn't even see light and dark. So,
How do you get around?
We use Lyft and Uber quite a bit.
What is it like as a blind person navigating an airport?
I would be lying if I didn't say it was a challenge, but the biggest challenge is oftentimes people want to help guide and direct us or pull us in the direction without really listening to what we're asking. Like, you know, I might say, can you tell me, is this gate 18? And, you know, somebody might reach out, grab me by the wrist and say, here, let me show you. And that's not what I'm asking. You know, I mean, you know, technically, that's like an assault, unconsented touch.
Right.
And, you know, and they wouldn't do that to a sighted person that asked for the directions. So navigating an airport terminal is difficult, but doable. You know, especially if you receive proper training and navigation. If we get to an airport and we have a lot of time, You know, we go to the check-in counter, check our bags, and we just say, can you tell us what direction TSA is in? They tell us and we go find it. You know, if we're getting a little tight, you know, we might ask, you know, can you just have somebody show us? Because the airports, they have a lot of individuals that's what they do. You know, we don't ask, hey, can you get us a couple of wheelchairs and push us back and forth? You know, we navigate it on our own, and you know, when we get through the TSA, you know, well, we might ask the TSA, are we going right or left for gate D7? You know, and they tell us, and we go that direction, and you know, a lot of times it's easy because you can follow the crowd, and you know, if they're sending you to D7, once you're down D, You know, it starts at one, and you know, you get, you know, you go past a couple of gates, and you're like, okay, there's gates on both sides, so we got to be close, and that's when we might say, ask somebody, you know, is this gate D7?
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes there's other technology we use. You know, AIRA, A-I-R-A, has technology where we can use our phones and talk to a live person on the end using our cameras, say, hey, can you tell us if you see any signs showing where gate D7 is?
Oh.
You know, so we use the tools that are out there, you know, and we prefer using tools that make navigating the airport, you know, as independent a process as possible, you know, for us.
That's great. So how do you access that particular tool you just mentioned?
It's an app I have on my phone.
Uh-huh.
It can be used for a lot of things. I know people that practice law that use it.
Uh-huh.
To help them read documents. You know, the AIRA app to read their mail, to help them, you know, read things that just aren't accessible to a blind person.
Well, that's great. I imagine that's a part of what the Federation does, is educate people about these tools that may not know about them. Am I right?
Well, yes. Yeah, I mean, one of the primary, missions of the National Federation of the Blind is to educate people about what we call the positive truths about blindness.
Hmm.
You know, that, and to show that blind people, when given access to those proper tools,
uh-huh,
the training and the opportunity, that we can be just as competitive, either the school or the work environment, as a sighted person. And so sometimes we have to educate blind people because they don't know.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you are a 40-year-old male or female working today and you lose your vision, you know far less about what's available in terms of tools and training than a 14 or 15-year-old who's grown up blind their entire lives.
Sure.
And been given access to those tools while in school and over summer projects.
Uh-huh.
So we try to identify those individuals and, you know, make sure they know what's available.
Sure.
You know, in terms of training, mm-hmm, and in terms of tools.
Uh-huh. I was curious to know, how did the ADA legislation affect public transportation, whether it's bus or plane or train?
When you get into things like airplanes,
mm-hmm,
I mean, there you're dealing more with, you know, the federal or the FAA. The air carrier, you know, access law,
mm-hmm,
and it's distinct and separate from the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Oh,
so you know, the Americans with Disabilities Act deals with places of public accommodation with the exclusion of air travel. They just reauthorized the Air Carrier Accessibility Act with some very specific changes, because, you know, it now mandates for some specialized training on how to more effectively deal with people with disabilities. It specifically addresses the accommodation of service animals and guide dogs, because,
uh-huh,
you know, people were bringing their household pets. And so they came up with their own individual guideline. And I'm just going to focus on guide dogs because
sure,
it's a blindness thing for us. If you travel 10 times this year and over the course of that travel, you use 5 different airlines, you know, every time you traveled, you had to go through a registration process with each individual airline you were going to fly on in order to be able to bring your guide dog with you.
Huh.
And that's incredibly, you know, cumbersome. And each airline had different rules and guidelines. Now the federal government's saying this is what the process is going to be, so that they only have to do it one time. And once they do it, it's good for all airlines. Great. You're starting, I believe United's already started putting it Braille on those overhead storage bins that mark where the seat labels are marked. You know, 5D.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that it doesn't always go row 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sometimes it's 1, 2, 3, and then 4 or 4 and 5 can be missing because they've inserted a gallery or you know, like, you know, a workstation where those two rows might be.
Huh.
And so once you get in out of first class, you know, 5 could be the bulkhead seat.
Uh-huh.
You know, or it could be one row behind the bulkhead seats. And plane configurations, you know, they differ.
Well, that's great. And what about the blind driver challenge?
So the blind driver challenge was really big back in 2011. Used a lot of the same technology that we're now seeing in the autonomous vehicle program. So it was really big because we were trying to push some sort of method and means where blind people could drive their own cars. But our big focus has been on making sure that as autonomous vehicles are developed, that they're designed with blind people in mind.
Huh.
And by that, you know, if you just simply throw a touchscreen in, but there's no way for me to engage that touchscreen because it doesn't talk,
yes,
then that's inaccessible to me.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're putting these cars out in like Waymo, and they don't have a driver and they don't have a steering wheel.
Huh.
And so we want to make sure that as they develop this technology and as states start passing laws that regulate when and how these vehicles can operate on the road, that they aren't including, you know, requirements such as, you know, must have a sighted driver with a driver's license. Depending on if I wanted to go down and buy an autonomous vehicle or rent one, that I, as a blind people, would be able to do it. And the blind driver challenge was really big, you know, 12, 13 years ago. And it was it was sort of a springboard that has now jumped and transitioned into the autonomous vehicles.
Ah, I see. Okay. Well, that's all very informative and interesting. Do you have any messages for visually impaired people regarding travel?
But before I answer that question, I want to address like terminology, because for years, if you had some sort of limited vision, but you were still in that legally blind spectrum, a lot of people, hospitals, doctors, you know, ophthalmologists, they will say, use that term visually impaired. You know, as a member of the National Federation of the Blind, I prefer to say somebody that has low vision.
Uh-huh.
Because when something's impaired or somebody's impaired, you know, it's sort of a negative connotation about that they can't do things.
Yes.
But low vision accurately describes the condition. They are low vision. You know, and even in the deaf and hard of hearing community, they don't use the phrase, you know, hearing impaired.
Uh-huh.
They're either hard of hearing or they're deaf.
Uh-huh.
So, and I'm in that deaf blind community because, I mean, I'm completely deaf in my right ear. So tips about travel.
Yeah.
One of the first things you have to do is you do need to do your research.
Mm.
You know, and, you know, you need to know to what degree, you know, the transportation that you're taking will accommodate you. And when I say accommodate you, I mean reasonably accommodate you.
Yes.
You know, my wife and I, we've traveled by train, by plane, and by boat. So if you're taking a cruise as a blind person, almost every cruise that sails in and out of United States ports is required to have staff on hand who specialize in accessibility and accommodations. And that truly, you know, like the one of the accommodations that my wife and I asked for is for somebody to give us the opportunity to board a little early and have somebody available to show us, you know, and walk us around the ship.
Uh-huh.
Because at that point in time, once we've had that orientation to the ship, you know, we can be on our own and we don't need much assistance. But, you know, they put, you know, every cruise ship I've been on, every night they slide a like an agenda of the next day's activities.
Yes.
And you know, what we were able to do, because it wasn't accessible, so they actually gave us limited Wi-Fi, on-ship Wi-Fi, and they would email it to us every day, you know, so that we could read it on our phones, you know. And so it's things like that, little things like that. When if you're flying on a plane and you're a straight cane user like I am,
yes,
you really need to be in a bulkhead seat, or not a bulkhead seat, but a window seat, in order to slide your cane on the side.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm not the type that's willing to surrender my cane, but, you know, some people might. But know what the plane configurations are, so that you know, do I have a window seat, am I a middle seat, or an aisle seat? Because they won't let you lay that cane down if you're on the outer side of your chair, which is the center aisle. They won't let you do it.
Oh.
But they can't stop you from laying it along the fuselage if you're in a window seat.
I see.
So know things like that. You know, I mean, that just makes it easier. If you've never been to a certain airport, you know, you can, there are descriptions of airports. And, you know, if you're flying into Dallas and, you know, you're leaving out of gate A, but when you return, you're returning to gate D, do you have to take their sky tram, or are you walking it? You know those things.
Yes.
You know, if you're traveling and you're checking your bags, you know, how are you going to identify and retrieve your bag when you get to your destination?
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, you can ask for assistance and tell them what your name is and the description of your luggage. And if you do, I hope you tip accordingly. But 9 out of 10 times when my wife and I fly, we can identify our own luggage because we stick an air tag in our luggage.
Ah.
And so once we get to the baggage claim area and we're at the right conveyor belt,
yes.
You know, I just go into the app and find my suitcase. And it will tell me 33 feet, 32, 30. It will count down the distance that bag is away from me and getting closer, or it's going 31, 32, 30. And I know it's moving away from me. So once again, there are tools that can help you, but you know, just you have to plan. You know, it's not like you're just gonna one day come home from work and throw stuff in a bag and head to the airport and go somewhere. You kind of want to plan and know, you know things such as that. We, you know, like I said, we've traveled by train. And, you know, when you're traveling by train, sometimes you have to get off and make your way from one train station to another. You might have to take a bus to a different town or city. And you want to know all of that. So,
sure.
So like I said, you have to research.
Good point.
In summary about traveling.
Yes.
Because I remember the first time I traveled after I went blind.
Yes.
And it can be a frightening experience.
Yes.
But and just understand that there are a lot of competent blind travelers out there who more than likely went through the exact same thing as you. And so, you know, even though it might get your anxieties up, I mean, if you truly want to go to San Diego and fly to San Diego, you know, there is a way that you can travel. And, you know, if they have any other questions or want to, you know, to get more insight about, you know, how you do things as a blind person, I would recommend that they reach out to the National Federation of the Blind, because it is a great resource. You know, not only is it, you know, out there advocating, you know, for the rights of blind, but it's educating blind people and sighted people about the positive truths associated with being blind.
Great. That puts a good end to our conversation. Thank you so much.
And for our listeners, remember, if you wanted advice on learning how to travel as a person with low vision, you can contact the Federation by calling 1-888-899-6322 or emailing at webmaster@az.nfb.org. I'll repeat that. Phone 1-888-899-6322. Email webmaster@az.nfb.org. Our next story is on a related topic. This is an article written by Thomas Panik, CEO of Guiding Eyes for the Blind, which is in New York, and Rachel Chang. The name of the story is, "I've been legally blind for decades. Here's what it's like to travel the world on my own. I started to lose my sight as a young man. Even as a boy, I had trouble seeing at night. Turns out I have a genetic condition called retinitis pigmentosa. It's the equivalent of tunnel vision that turns to darkness at night. Nonetheless, I've always thrived on travel. I've always managed to go places on my own, but what makes my travels unique is that I've always done so with a guide dog. My dog does all the navigating, but I've been traveling around the world independently for 25 years, and I've never once gotten so much as a bump. My dog's job is to make sure I'm on the sidewalk, going around obstacles and pedestrians, and stopping at curbs. Paying attention to traffic is my responsibility. My dog will identify a car turning in my lane and backing up, but I use the same navigation tools you do, either Google Maps or Apple Maps. My phone reads aloud, so I use it just like you do too, except I listen to the navigation and then my dog takes me from block to block, stopping at curbs. At Guiding Eyes for the Blind, our guide dogs are offered at no charge to people who are blind or visually impaired. Volunteer puppy raisers care for them in their homes for the first 18 to 24 months, and then we put them through a formal training process in which we teach them how to behave in different environments. For example, we do mock TSA simulations. Those with visual impairments usually use either a cane or a guide dog. The main difference is the cane identifies obstacles. For example, if you're boarding a train, you can use the cane to feel if the door is open, locate the side of the door, and whether the train has arrived. Meanwhile, I'm on my iPhone reading the newspaper and my dog pulls me along. He knows the door is open and where the exits of the train are. It really is a different experience when you give up the cane and let a dog do the navigating. The incredible thing about guide dogs is that once they've been somewhere, they know. They're very pattern-oriented. They're very intuitive and have a good pattern recognition. Whenever I go to Washington, D.C., for example, my dog knows as soon as I land at Reagan National Airport that I need to go to the metro and will navigate out of the two terminal areas to get there. The unique thing about having a guide dog is as soon as I exit the aircraft, I'm able to be mobile. My dog knows how to navigate to escalators and elevators and out the airport to a taxi or Uber. When people travel, they say, "I want to go see this." But if you think about that for a second, what are you seeing? You taste food, you hear the language. That's an immersion in a different culture. A few months ago, I was in Athens with my son Timothy. As I was going up to the Parthenon, one of the guides noticed I was blind and ran over and said he wanted to give me something. He came out with a model of the Parthenon the size of a shoebox and let me feel the model. Now I know in my mind what the Parthenon looks like. I know what it feels like. I can't tell you that I saw it, but I was certainly there. This is Ann Dalton at Are We There Yet? Sun Sounds, Tucson. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio, then under Programming Links, left-click on On Demand Podcast. You can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.
Come on and get your kicks on Route 666.